This is the son of PCJ.
This is London. This is London.
The Voice of Russia World Service.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
This is the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland, with a relay transmission via Bonaire in the Netherlands Antilles, directed to New Zealand.
This is Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
Bonjour à vous si vous nous rejoignez sur Radio France Internationale. Il est 5h à Paris.
This is Radio Ukraine International.
This is the English program of Radio Deutsche Welle, Germany's international broadcasting service.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette Macquarie and Keith Perron.
Well, hello, friends. It's really nice to have you with us once again. Coming up on the program today, we're going to be looking at the events surrounding 9/11. Because as you know, September was the 10th anniversary. We'll be talking about a personal story involving one of my colleagues from China Radio International, Jocelyn Ford, and myself when we reported on the subject.
The HFCC, or High Frequency Coordination Conference, ended September 16th in Dallas, Texas. We'll have a look at what was discussed with all the recent cuts that have affected international broadcasters.
Recently, we've reported on the 30-minute edition about a radio station in Boston called WILD, Wild, that after more than 40 years switched to a format from China Radio International this past summer. But it seems listeners are not tuning in. They're turning away.
We have this and much more, so stay tuned. Media Network Plus, where analog and digital duke it out. First, here's Keith with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
Community radio operators in Thailand have called on the National Broadcasting and Telecommunications Commission to do everything in its authority to ensure community radio stations are not exploited for commercial or political gain. The call was issued at a seminar on regulating community radio stations organized by the National Federation of Community Radio. Participants agreed that community radio stations have been exploited for commercial and political gain for years without a law to govern them. The seminar was aimed at brainstorming solutions to the problem for submission to the NBTC for consideration. Several dozen Ukrainian journalists have gathered outside the mayor's office in Kiev to protest the closure of local television channels. The protesters taped their mouths closed with black tape and brought a coffin that symbolized what they said was filled with reports that were not aired because of the closures. Journalists who took part in the protest on September 19th say that the mayor's office gave the order to stop broadcasting of ATN television programs, which are often critical of local authorities. An Islamic-backed radio station in Somalia has awarded assault rifles and hand grenades to the winners of a children's Quran recital competition. The station, which is sponsored by the Al-Shabaab rebel militia, said the first two prizes was an AK-47, with a child who came in third, two FN-1 hand grenades, and 250 euros. Three children also received religious books. The Quran recital contest has been running for 3 years and takes place after Ramadan. In 2009, prizes included hand grenades, anti-tank mines, and an AK-47. The winners of the contest were between the ages of 17 and 20. The precise age of the winners this year is unknown. Indonesia's Communication and Information Ministry has banned 10 licensed private radio stations in Batam, Indonesia, for impacting the flight safety at the Chang'an Airport in Singapore and the Hang Nadam Airport in Batam. 200 people have lost their jobs. The agency head told the Jakarta Post on Monday that the ministry's Director General of Post and Telecommunications had received letters complaining from the Singapore and Hantang Airport authorities in June about radio communications interrupted between pilots and the air traffic controllers due to the frequency synchronization problems caused by the radio stations in Batam. During takeoff and landings, pilots often heard songs aired from the radio stations, so they could not clearly hear traffic guidance from ATC over their radios. The government of Hong Kong has promised that it will not become routine for administrative officers to be appointed to the head of RTHK, which is Radio Television Hong Kong. The permanent Secretary for Commerce and Economic Development, Elizabeth Tse, reiterated the new director of broadcasting, Roy Tsang, was chosen because none of the 26 applicants in an open recruitment exercise were deemed suitable. She said the government didn't think a suitable candidate could be found if it launched a new recruitment exercise soon. Mr. Tang's appointment has been criticized by RTHK's staff union because he doesn't have any experience in broadcasting. And finally, state funding for Ireland's public broadcaster, RTE, needs to be urgently reviewed, according to a representative body of the country's independent commercial radio broadcasters. The Independent Broadcasters of Ireland have called for the long overdue and comprehensive restructuring of state-run radio stations, as well as to abolish the broadcasting levy. Chairman of the group, Scott Williams, said that RTE Radio currently exists under a public service mandate, receiving direct funding from every household in the state. Yet it accumulated 31 million euros in commercial advertising revenue last year. And that was just some of the headlines from the world of media and radio. A special thank you goes to Andy Sennett at Radio Netherlands Worldwide for the stories used. To find out more, you can find a link to them at our own website, www.pcjmedia.com.
And you're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio. From September 12th to the 16th, international broadcasters from around the world converged in Dallas, Texas for the High Frequency Coordination Conference. It's the first time the HFCC was held in the United States. The conference brings together all the major international broadcasters to discuss frequency coordination so as not to interfere with each other's broadcasts for the upcoming B11 fall-winter season. Over the last few months, we've seen budget cuts at the BBC World Service, Radio Netherlands, and Deutsche Welle, who's cutting their shortwave output from 250 hours a week to only 55 hours. Some stations have gone completely. Radio Sweden, Radio Prague, and some others are now just history. So with everything that has taken place, is there still anything to be discussed? Jeff White, one of the organizers of the conference in Dallas, now joins us on the line.
Well, we had about almost 100 geeth that came in throughout the week. Not all of them were there for all 5 days, but some came in for at least a day or two or three or 4 days. So it was really a pretty good attendance in the end. We had a handful of people who were not able to get visas and couldn't attend. But most of those were because of, I think they started applying too late to get the visas. You really got to, especially during these summer months, apply pretty early to get a visa to get into the U.S. But pretty good turnout overall.
Now, we spoke before you were just about to head to Dallas. And the question that I had for you then, I don't know if you remember it, it was, you know, with all the cuts that have taken place, let's say, in the last year or even in the last 6 months, would there be anything to discuss? how did it turn out in the end?
Well, there were, I don't know how many thousands of collisions still had to be resolved. And in the end, I could tell because I was the one who distributed the collision lists at the end of each day. And they kept getting smaller every day. So I think quite a few of them were resolved. But despite the cutbacks and so on, there's still, you know, so many transmissions out there in shortwave and such a limited number of frequencies that it can still get very, very crowded on the bands.
You know, I think that a lot of people, including myself, are surprised to hear that, because I think a lot of people would say, well, with all the cutbacks that are taking place and everything, there should be more space on the bands. But to hear that there were, you know, a thousand, almost, you know, more than 1,000 collisions taking place is quite surprising.
Well, Charles Caudill, the president of World Christian Broadcasting, which operates KNLS in Alaska, and they're building a new shortwave station, Madagascar World Voice, in Madagascar. He gave a speech on the Thursday of the conference, and at the very end he said, I just want to say thank you to all of you who've been coming back on transmissions, because that just leaves more frequencies for us.
What were some of the new topics that they discussed this year?
Well, the big topic was the expansion of the HFCC's activities. And that is in light of some of the cutbacks in shortwave. A lot of the HFCC members, not a lot, but I mean several HFCC members have dropped out over the past few years because they no longer have HF transmissions. What the HFCC is trying to do is expand the scope of the organization to encompass other forms of program delivery as well, such as internet, podcasts, et cetera, satellites, local AM and FM broadcasts, so that some of these members will hopefully come back, and some of the members who may cut back shortwave in the future will remain members of the HFCC. Now, shortwave, I am sure, will remain the primary activity of the HFCC, and the shortwave coordination will remain the primary thing that goes on at these conferences twice a year. But we're talking about dedicating perhaps one day of the conference to dealing with these other modes of delivery and other aspects of international broadcasting, such as programming, audience research, other non-technical shortwave topics.
Now you're talking about the collisions that take place on the dial. There's a list that's submitted to everybody showing all the collisions. How then do you coordinate to say, okay, well, I want to use this frequency. Can you use this one? How does that work?
Well, these people, there are 100 or so of them, get together twice each year, and they've done that for 20-some years. A lot of them know each other pretty well. And so it goes beyond politics. Politics are pretty much left out of it. They're technical people. And so they will get together and find a solution, whether it be, you know, changing an antenna position, changing the time of a broadcast. Sometimes some of the collisions that come out on paper are not actually as bad as they look, and they know from previous practice that they're not going to cause a problem on the air, so they'll just leave it. Sometimes, of course, they'll have to change a frequency. And if that's the case, then usually the protocol is that the station that's been on that frequency longest will stay there, and the other station will change the frequency. And sometimes they'll help each other find alternate frequencies. They all work together pretty miraculously, really, to solve these problems in whatever method they have to use.
Now, Continental Transmitters, based in Texas, was one of the organizers or one of the sponsors, whatever you want to call them. Did you happen to have a chance to visit Continental, and what has Continental been saying? I mean, considering with the cuts and everything, are they still manufacturing transmitters?
Yeah, Continental was the main sponsor of the event. And we did on the Thursday or the Wednesday of the conference take a trip to their factory. All participants went along, and we could see what they're doing. they admit that, of course, the orders for shortwave transmitters have been going down in recent years, but they have some very big orders from Saudi Arabia, from other countries. One of them is from Syria, but they haven't been able to go ahead with that one yet for political reasons, from various countries that have ordered a large number of transmitters, HF transmitters. And we went, for example, because they've got various buildings in this complex, we went in one that must have had, I would say maybe 9 100-kilowatt shortwave transmitters that they were constructing in the middle of building right now. And three of them, in fact, are going to, I mentioned Madagascar World Voice, they're going to Madagascar probably in December. So these people are still building transmitters, and they are still, they believe there's still a lot of life left in shortwave.
You know, you actually just touched on something that I think hasn't really been touched on before by many people, is that it's not all doom and gloom. There's still a lot of activity taking place. You know, and if there was no business in it, I think Continental probably would have stopped making transmitters.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I mean, having said that, Continental makes a lot of other transmitters and technical equipment, radar equipment for the government and so on and so forth. I mean, it's not their only business. But certainly, you know, I mean, we've seen companies in the past, the other major competitor in the U.S., Harris, stopped making shortwave transmitters many years ago. And right now, Continental is really the only one in the U.S. that makes high-power shortwave transmitters. But they, you know, it's still a good business for them. There's no question.
Jeff White, thank you very much for joining us, and go take care of that cold.
We'll see what we can do. Thanks, Keith.
A few weeks ago, we reported about a small AM radio station in the United States that for over 40 years was the voice of the black community in Boston, Massachusetts. WILD this past summer changed its format and accepted Chinese communist money and switched to a format from China Radio International. But it seems the new format has not done anything to bring new listeners. In fact, figures have been dropping off. From the last ratings done a few weeks ago, it showed that WILD has only 500 listeners for every 15 minutes, with a listening average of 3 to 4 minutes. Here's Anne Donahue from Public Radio International with the details.
Boston's home for classic soul. 1090 WILD. Boston.
For most of the last 40 years, radio station WILD in Boston was the go-to place for African-American music, news, and talk, featuring talk shows hosted by the Reverend Al Sharpton and Tom Joyner. But earlier this year, all that changed.
Examining the events that impact and shape China and the rest of the world. This is the Beijing Hour, 1 hour of news and information brought to you twice a day, every weekday by China Radio International.
In June, Boston's home for classic soul quietly turned Chinese when WILD began leasing its airtime to an English language service of China Radio International, a product of the Chinese government.
Frontline brings you fresh story from modern China and explores the society behind them.
The programs are an eclectic mix of news and information on Chinese culture and society, interspersed with a syrupy English and Chinese pop music and the occasional Chinese language lesson.
我要学汉语. I want to learn Chinese.
One hour-long program focused on the Chinese custom of confinement for new mothers in the first month after giving birth. No driving, no leaving the house, no cold food, and no washing your hair? Boston Globe columnist Alex Beam has spent much of his summer listening to the new Chinese WILD. He found some of it amusing. Features on hermaphroditic butterflies and police monitoring snoring at Beijing hotels, for example. But he also found a decidedly pro-Beijing bias in some news stories. Even so, Beam thinks China Radio International might just work.
I think it could easily be as effective as the Voice of America, Deutsche Welle. I think you're hearing Chinese people talking about China, and there's always a huge interest, I mean, all over the world I think goodwill does spread that way in the sense that people care that others are actually reaching out to them.
While China Radio International has been peddling its programming overseas for many years, an hour here or there, WILD is only the second station in the U.S. to adopt the Chinese format full-time. The radio initiative is part of a much larger charm offensive to try to improve China's image overseas. Beijing has even marketed itself alongside the bright lights of Broadway.
China rented a huge billboard in Times Square to present messages about China.
Harvard professor Joseph Nye has written extensively about China's use of soft power. He says there are limits to how much goodwill China can create through government projects.
I think the Chinese don't understand that a lot of American soft power comes from our civil society. It's outside the government. And the problem that China Radio International faces is that it's a governmental organ. And if it's propaganda, it's not attractive and therefore doesn't produce soft power.
Nevertheless, China is throwing a reported $6.5 billion into this soft power initiative. But AM radio may not get them much bang for their buck. The ratings at the new WILD are dismal. They're reaching only half of their previous audience, about 500 listeners during any given 15 minutes. Radio industry watcher Greg Fitzgerald, whose agency distributes the German-English language program Deutsche Welle, says international broadcasters who pay for play lack the credibility to attract American decision-makers. But Fitzgerald says finding an elite American audience may only be part of the Chinese government's goal.
Some people in different ministries like to see dots on a map. If you are in the information ministry or something else, you can point to that map and say, see, we're on in Boston. People do want to hear what we have to say. And as a propaganda tool, it can be effective within institutions, but in terms of reaching listeners, it has very little impact.
China Radio International is still trying. It broadcasts in 43 languages, including Spanish, Russian, and Arabic, and claims to reach 300 million people. But putting your programming out there is not quite the same as actually finding someone willing to listen to it.
You're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio. And now, that long-awaited moment, we have a contest winner to announce, and this is for the grand prize of the summer contest for the ATS-909X.
Well, you know, Paulette, I think before we announce the winner, we still have a couple of minutes because I want to reply to some people that have been writing in asking us if there's going to be another contest to replace this one. Well, we're not going to have that right away, but there is going to be a new contest that will open in December and will continue until February. The details for it will be made at our website when we get close to the date of starting that contest. And of course, Paulette, what is our website in case somebody doesn't know already?
www.pcjmedia.com.
You know, Paulette, here's something really funny that came up. There have actually been a couple of listeners, I'm not going to mention any names, but they were complaining about the lucky draw system.
Oh.
I mean, you know, if you buy a lottery ticket, right, and the numbers go into a big ball and then they turn it around and then the number comes up, mm-hmm. Well, that's how it's called the luck of the draw, right?
Exactly.
Don't write to me and say that you've been listening to the show for 20 years because we haven't been here for 20 years. here's another funny letter actually before an entry that we got, and I'm not going to mention the name of the person and I'm not going to mention the country, but they just wrote, "Dear Keith and Paulette, I love the program," and then a lot of nice things. They mentioned things that they heard on the show, and then they said, here, listen to this. "I first started listening to the two of you in 1997.
Okay.
"And since 1997, I have been a loyal listener to PCJ.
Okay, that's very funny since we only met in 2000.
Exactly. And considering PCJ wasn't really formed until 2009. But anyway, this is the wackiness that we sometimes get. Okay, the winner of the grand prize for the Sanjin ATS-909X is... Denning in Tasmania, Australia. Joe Denning in Tasmania, Australia. Now, before we get to our next item, I want to thank, of course, everyone that wrote in. There is going to be a small thank you gift that will be sent to you, but just please remember, it takes time. You know, we don't have a big correspondence department that can just send the stuff out. It is basically done by myself, and I do a little bit here, a little bit there, but don't worry, you will be getting a small thank you gift for entering. All right, let's continue. Now, the month of September saw the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks that took place in New York City. To look a bit about that time, I want to focus on a very personal story, a personal story involving myself and a colleague of mine, Jocelyn Ford, who were working at China Radio International, and how it played out for us when we were the only media outlet in China to report on it.
Good morning, everyone. It's September the 12th. The year is 2001. Today we present special coverage of the terrorist attack that took place in New York City and Washington last night, which began around 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Two hijacked commercial jets slammed into the 110-story World Trade Center in Manhattan just before 9 p.m. last night, Beijing time, and the two buildings collapsed about 1 hour later. Another hijacked plane struck the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. All the government buildings around the Pentagon were evacuated, and many government buildings in the U.S. today, including the post office and libraries, are closed. A fourth jetliner, also apparently hijacked, crashed in Pennsylvania. Over the next hour, we'll bring you special reports.
We certainly told the news as we thought fit, which wasn't always what was done at China Radio International in those days. I do remember when I first started the job, it was January that year, that I went into the director's office and I said, look, there are things I can do and things I can't do, but I am a news person, and something may come up during this year that I will treat as news. Maybe you wish I didn't, and that'll happen. And September 11th was that day.
Now let's talk about that day for a moment, Jocelyn, because both of us have some very unique stories of what happened that day. What was the thing that you remember the most before we went on air?
I remember you being exhausted and me being worried whether we'd be able to carry off the show because you'd been all night and keeping it up to date. But really, more than anything, it was actually what happened when we left the newsroom that struck me most. Because, you know, if you're a news person, it's in your blood. You need to know what's going on that show, then you need to update for the next show. And I remember leaving the newsroom and saying, okay, how are you going to lead the next show? How do you move the story ahead? And everyone just stared at me, and I couldn't believe it. And I said, well, where is your news director? Who's doing the assigning? What are you on? And they said, oh, he's at a meeting. Oh, he's at a meeting about the terrorist attack, right? Oh, no, nothing to do with that. And I was just flabbergasted that nobody said anything. In fact, one reporter said, oh, you only care because you're American. And that's when I realized what Chinese media was all about, that everybody had been totally into government think. They couldn't think on their own. My immediate reaction at that point was, no, it's not. The U.S. will have to react, and when the U.S. reacts, that will change global politics. And indeed, from my perspective and from sitting here in Beijing for the past 10 years, this is what gave China a window of opportunity to go ahead, develop without the U.S. on its back, because the U.S. was on somebody else's back.
Well, you know, that morning, Jocelyn, before we went on air, there was a young producer who was giving us some help. And he had shown up, and I had said to him, you know, we should be covering this for the full show. He disagreed with that because he said, this happened in the United States. It doesn't reflect on the people of China or China. That shocked me.
Exactly. It was that sentiment. It was the we are sort of on a little island, completely out in the universe someplace, divorced from the rest of the world on Earth. That was the feeling in the newsroom among our Chinese colleagues. And, you know, I remember thinking there could be consequences for doing live news. To be frank, at that time, I believe I was not aware that on breaking stories like this, they were supposed to wait for the, you know, whether it was President Jiang Zemin or whoever was up the chain to say, okay, it's ready, it's okay to cover it. I didn't realize that you had to get that level of permission. Of course, I knew there were sensitive stories, but I didn't know how far it went. So we were potentially putting people's jobs at risk by doing
what
we
did. But, you know, Jocelyn, when I look back at that day, the thing that sticks out in my mind, because live news on China Radio International is extremely rare. Now, listeners who listen overseas may not know this, except for one transmission of CRI News and Reports, which was done at 7 a.m. Beijing time. Every other news program that went out on CRI was recorded usually 30 minutes or 1 hour before broadcast. So when we went on the air to report on what happened in New York City, it was groundbreaking.
Well, right. I mean, when I was invited to work at China Radio International, I was invited to help develop the show, China Radio, which I named Real Time Beijing. It's sort of tongue in cheek because at that time a lot of news was not terribly real and certainly not timely. I'm not sure anyone else got the joke, but I sort of enjoyed that. So it seemed like a trendy name at the time. But the premise of that show was that this was going to be the first live show since 1989 when one of the announcers had chosen sides and stuck with the students and called on governments around the world to side with the students. And after that, there were not to be any live broadcasts until 2001. Now, what I found remarkable was not only did they start live broadcasts, but they had the first foreigner, myself, co-hosting it and co-producing it and having a voice on that. So very China-esque. They leapt into a new stage, not baby steps saying, oh, well, first we'll try with our own announcers, but they actually had a foreign news person who said she does news and not propaganda come in and let me do live news.
After the program went to air, there's something that when I think back now, I giggle about it. I didn't find it so funny at the time, but after we did the show, we went to the director's office. We were, I like to say to people, we were summoned to the director's office for a meeting with the director of the English Language Service and the then news director. What was your recollection of that meeting? Because I remember sitting there saying to myself in my head, something's wrong here. Something's wrong with what's going on here.
Well, I'm not sure I remember it terribly clearly. What I do remember is that all of our bosses were on vacation or away, and the top boss was teaching English at that time to ministers or something of that nature. But I remember a bunch of orders: no interviews with experts, no internet news. Basically, they're trying to say you can't say what's going on. And I recall actually going out to do. They said we couldn't use tape, in other words, recorded interviews from the people we spoke with on the street about the reaction to the terrorist attack. And I remember some people were celebratory. A number of Chinese on the streets thought this was a great thing. And when we came back, I had to decide, okay, am I going to self-censor, which is against my principles? And I recall you had been doing internet searches globally, and you were reading some of the comments off the internet. And I, likewise, instead of playing the tape, which I'd been forbidden to do, said what people told me, which to me was conveying the information better than doing nothing and something that I could live with. So I remember a bunch of rules and trying to get around them. But I don't remember that much about that meeting. So you tell me what you remember.
What I remember very well is we were sitting there and the news director, who was also a presenter at the time, he was, I sort of had the feeling like we were called to the principal's office and they were scolding us for doing it. And I remember thinking, wait a second, China just got the 2008 games. We did something which for China Radio International was groundbreaking. It was different. And I should also mention, we had no budget. I remember the night that I was trying to get some some sound bites and some interviews with people overseas, I had to literally almost like fight the news director for the phone card to make overseas phone calls. So we had no budget. And it's almost like they couldn't see it.
You know, actually, I'd like to think that we were sort of part of that whole change, because they knew that in order to get credit, and I remember bringing this up in our defense, saying, well, look at what we're doing is bringing you credibility, which you will need to host the Olympics successfully. You will need a freer media. And we're being part of that. I recall making that argument. But I don't remember so many specifics from that meeting, but the subsequent meeting when we were called in essentially for a self-criticism.
Yes, I remember that. And I remember how it began. I don't know if you remember this part, but I remember the director of the English Language Service, she praised us at how good the show was. And then all of a sudden, they disliked everything.
I remember that we were told there was
yes,
a complaint.
The famous complaint.
And I asked, the famous complaint, always. The anonymous complaint. I asked who was it from, because I heard some people had very positive things to say, and we couldn't get to the bottom of this, which suggests it was somebody with political clout. And I recall, I think a lot of the sensitivity was because I was trying to humanize reporting. I remember I got in touch with a New York correspondent and said, well, what happened to the Chinese nationals? Are they all accounted for? Are they all safe? Can you tell us about their lives? And I remember him saying, well, the consulate won't tell us. And you know, I said, well, try harder, because this is our constituency. We are a Beijing-based program. There are people here who may have relatives in New York, and they may be listening to the show, and we need to serve them. And he said, does it matter? At which point, I just almost fell off my rocker. Well, we didn't have rocking chairs. But anyway, it all came home to me. Yes, this is the voice. These people, the other reporters had been trained to be the voice of government. And I was trying to speak from the perspective of our listeners. And they had never done that. And that was the whole issue, the whole problem with the media at that point. And I must say, 10 years later, we've come a long way, baby. The media very much sits in the readers or the excuse me, the listeners' shoes in this day and age, and that a lot has changed. But at that point, none of the reporters could understand why I was trying to do anything except for the official line.
Apparently, reports are coming in that some U.S. embassies around the world have closed, and some have been given permission to close.
It is up to each individual embassy. We do not yet know about Beijing. However, the U.S. embassy in Tokyo has said it will not be open for business today. Embassies elsewhere in the world are also closing down, especially in the Middle East. Also, there are reports about what will happen next in U.S. airport security. Airport security will certainly be scrutinized. There will be a lot of soul searching. Some experts are saying the terrorists targeted domestic flights because security there is less strict. Luggage does not necessarily need to be screened. There are no armed guards as there are on international flights. There are some new stricter security regulations that were to take place in November. In July, federal regulators decided on how to strengthen security measures. Also, I think in the United States, we do expect wider discussion on security and security consciousness. A Phoenix TV out of Hong Kong, they had a commentator who suggested that U.S. concerns with the...
You know what's interesting about this whole thing that happened? Because we did two shows like that. And in the back of my head, I was thinking, you know, I don't think they're going to ever want to do this kind of news program or news style magazine again. But not too long after the United States attacked and invaded Afghanistan, they did a special 3-hour live program on the invasion. And I found it kind of ironic and kind of funny, actually, that they didn't ask you or I to participate in it.
Right. I remember at that self-criticism meeting, sort of like back in the Cultural Revolution, where I felt I was being asked to criticize myself, I said, look it, I do news. And if you're not comfortable with what I'm doing, take me off the show and replace me. And I seriously thought they might, and I wasn't sure I was really ready to do that. But I really, you know, if they were not happy with me treating this as a news story and as a human being, then, you know, maybe then they should take over. And I remember I thought at the time the one person who was going to replace me may have considered it a split second, but then, and I was told this later by other reporters, they had considered this first live, you know, real-time Beijing news show a huge breakthrough, and they didn't want to lose that ground. And I had other reporters coming up and saying, listen, Jocelyn, don't go too far, or else, you know, they'll move back, they'll move us back to before 2001, before where we started, and wouldn't that be worse than what you know, this show has accomplished to date? And, you know, that's the tricky thing about being in China. You want things to move in a certain direction. They're not going to move the way you want them to. But if you don't compromise, you sometimes get something worse. And this is really the dilemma for even living in China today.
Jocelyn Ford, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The British DX Club is one of the world's leading DX clubs, with hundreds of members both in the UK and around the globe. BDXE produce a comprehensive monthly magazine called Communication, covering all aspects of the DXing hobby. The BDXE Audio Circle is also available and is a monthly program of DX catches and general chat about radio. For more information, please write to the British DX Club, 10 Hemdean Hill, Caversham, Reading, RG4, 7SB in the United Kingdom, or visit the website at www.bdxc.org.uk. That's www.bdxc.org.uk.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.
This is Paulette Demchuk-McQuarrie inviting you to join me every week for Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio on the PCJ Radio Network. Details at www.pcjmedia.com and www.ukrainianrootsradio.com.
Hi, I'm Peter Anthony Holder, and I would like you to join me for a very eclectic and different kind of radio show. It's called the Stuff File Program. Where else would you get to hear a well-renowned Hollywood acting teacher, a best-selling science fiction writer, a guy who teaches llamas how to be golf caddies, or the man who has Hitler's toilet, all wrapped up with some of the oddest news stories around? It's a rhetorical question. There's only one place. The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. There are various ways to catch the show. You can find it at my website at peteranthonyholder.com. Check out my blog at peteranthonyholder.blogspot.com. Find it at cyberstationusa.com, radioforall.net, or simply subscribe to it on iTunes. You've forgotten all those places already, haven't you? Okay, just Google the title. It's called The Stuff File Program, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. Catch it, enjoy it, and have a chuckle or two. The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Radio will never be the same again.
Hi, this is Ian McFarland. If you're an SWL and feel nostalgic for the good old days of shortwave, you'll be interested in three sets of CDs that Colin Newell and I have produced. The first gives you 100 idents and interval signals from stations around the world. Then there's the foreign language recognition course that will help you identify the myriad languages that you can hear on shortwave. And the newest CD set, a look at the past 20 years in shortwave broadcasting with some of my broadcasting colleagues, and a look into the future. The proceeds from the sale of these CDs are in aid of a charity, a food bank for the less fortunate in my city of Duncan, British Columbia in Canada. Learn more about these CDs on the dxr.ca internet website. That's dxer.ca. Good listening, everyone.
Well, before we end off the program, let's now cut to Dan Hensley with a look at propagation.
On September 24th, we have a 10.7 centimeter flux of 135, an A index of 5, and a KP index of 2. On September 25th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 130, an A index of 8, and a KP index of 3. On September 26th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 130, an A index of 5, a KP index of 2. On September 27th, we have a 10.7 centimeter flux of 130, an A index of 8, and a KP index of 3. On September 28th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 130, an A index of 5, and a KP index of 2. On September 29th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 130, an A index of 5, a KP index of 2. On September 30th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 130, an A index of 15, KP index of 4. Sunspots 1301 and 1295 through 1296 are crackling with C flares. C-class flares have few noticeable consequences here on Earth. No large coronal holes have been detected on the Earth-facing side of the Sun as of September 20th. On September 17th, the Sun was peppered with spots and reached a highest sunspot value in cycle 24. September 18th, there was a threat for Earth-directed C flares. On the 19th, there was a threat for Earth-directed M flares. Despite the nice numbers we have been seeing in all the indexes, propagation has been affected by a number of other factors, and we should expect propagation to continue to be unstable.
And that was Dan Hensley of Shortwave America. Well, actually, we're nearly at the end of the program. And this is the 55-minute edition of Media Network Plus, heard once a month on Radio Miami International, broadcast to Latin America, the Caribbean, and North America on 9,955 kilohertz. But if you missed it, because, you know, Paulette, you know, Dan is on the show and he gives the propagation report and it's a little bit like a weather forecast, right?
Right.
I was joking with him the other day. If he says in his forecast, oh, yeah, radio reception is going to be excellent, perfect, and everything, and then it's lousy, I said, I'm going to be making fun of you.
Well, probably you and many others.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, if you want to catch the show again, go to our website, Paulette, which is?
www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus.
That's right. And I should also remind you that there is a weekly edition of the show, an international edition, that is heard on the World Radio Network. The broadcast times are Saturdays, first to Africa and Asia from 10 to 10:30 UTC, then to Europe from 13 to 13:30 UTC, and then to North America from 21 to 21:30 UTC. To find out all the details, just go to the website that Paulette gave a moment ago. And you can listen on also Sirius XM Radio in the United States. And the channel for that, which is right in front of me, which I seem to have misplaced, is 120 on Sirius XM Radio. Listeners in the United Kingdom and also in Europe can listen on Sky Digital on channel 122. In fact, one of our listeners listens regularly in the United Kingdom to the weekly edition of the program.
Okay, at the risk of being laughed at, Keith, from foggy, cold, damp Vancouver, Canada, this is Paulette McQuarrie.
And I'm Keith Perron in Taipei, Taiwan, wishing you well.
Hoping to see you soon.
And best 73s to you all.
And 88s to the ladies.
Mother. Monopoly 21, checkers and chess. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mr. Fred Lassie in a breakfast mess. Yeah, 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 yeah. Let's play Twister, let's play Risk. Yeah, 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 yeah. I'll see you in heaven. About this one, tell me, are you locked in the pond? Andy, are you goofing on Elvis? Are we losing touch?
walking with the staff of war. Yeah, 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 yeah. Newton got mean by the apple. Egypt was troubled by the horrible asp. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mr. Charles Darwin had the golden mask. Yeah, 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 yeah. Now, Andy, did you hear about this one? Tell me, are you locked in the pond? Hey, Andy, are you goofing on Elvis?
Hey, baby, are you having goes for the offering. Yeah, 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 yeah. Here's a truck stop instead of St. Peter's. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mr. Andy Kaufman's gone wrestling.